Just to clarify, this show is now called White to See Radio. It used to be called R3 with JH, and then it was Half Past Presents R3 with JH. I didn't like those names, so I went back to White to See Radio, which was the name of my original podcast back from 09 with my wife, which then became Half Past Adventures. So that show is no longer White to See Radio, but the show is now White to See Radio. You're going to hear me call it R3 with JH, you're going to hear me call it Half Past Presents R3, but really the show is White to See Radio, and you're going to hear this intro for a long time because I recorded like 35 episodes. Enjoy.
John, you're a dork.
As I mentioned in the last episode of R3 that I released for you guys, this is actually the at last R3 episode that I released publicly before I took down the podcast formally. It sat there for a couple of months, but I mean, I formally took it down. This was the last one that was up there. Just because I wanted to move these to the haphazard audience because it makes more sense here. And I just kept forgetting to post them over there. And I still have like 30 episodes to post after this one. However, this was the last one I released publicly because, as you know from hearing these after hearing my voice, I had, I put some songs in front of the episodes, and always those songs are songs that I helped write and record back in the day when I was doing music all the time. Some of them are okay. Some of them are shitty. Some of them are really bad. But whatever, fuck it. So what I'd end up doing with R3, and I'm going to keep doing it for R3, until I just run out of songs, I guess, is, the intro song after I give you this intro here, which you'll hear in a second, is some song that I helped record or write back when I was doing music back in high school and college. And then I go to do the episode, and then I end the show with playing the full song for you. So I don't know what song I played at the beginning of this or any of these releases. I'm not looking as I'm doing this. This is me talking about all the songs, the music I used to do, music by me, and that I do play a couple full songs in the middle of this episode. This was a little bit longer than normal R3 episodes, as in there's some full songs in there for you that we recorded, some of the ones I liked a lot or had fun with. But this kind of gives you an explanation of why I chose to start the R3 episodes with music from old bands I was in. And some of them are just really bad garage recordings, but I don't really care. It's for fun. It's content for fun. So hopefully you enjoy it, because if you don't, I'm sorry. The R3 episodes are going to have these songs on them. So without further ado, here we go. Music by me. Welcome back to R3 with JH. Today is going to be a fun show, as they all are, because, you know, you're here with me. We're hanging out, and I'm in the car driving, you know, out to my mom's house to say hi to her and do some work stuff. And I decided to grab my recorder and talk to you. So today, I'm going to talk about music. More particularly, I'm going to talk about the music you hear before and after each episode of this show, because I haven't told you what I'm doing with that, and you might want to know why you hear different songs and why some of the songs are really shitty that are played on the show. So, before I get going on here, if you haven't yet, you should check out my book, Ions Anthology. That's E-Y-N-E-S Anthology. You can go to ionsanthology.com and check it out. Let's take a pause here, and let's listen to the trailer for that book, because I think it's something you're going to enjoy. All right, hit play.
Monsters are everywhere. They always have been. They lurk, hidden in every shadow. Behind every dark thought, they are probably in your closet, possessing your friends. And they're almost certainly creeping behind you now. They are most often undetectable. And when they're not, it's too late. Throughout time, these monsters have feasted on society, both physically and metaphysically. The chaos they bring fuels a great dark spirit that seeks to end the world with pain and torment. The Ions are our only hope. The Ions family has been cursed since before recorded history to detect the presence of these monsters. It is their bound duty to stop these creatures from destroying humanity through any means necessary, be it by sword, spell, or other. Though the Ions can feel when the creatures are in close proximity, the monsters themselves are also drawn toward the family. But not everything is as it seems. And although the war between the monsters and the Ions has waged for centuries, the black and white battle lines have grayed over the years. Not all monsters may be considered evil. Not all Ions are as righteous as one would think. These are the tales of the Ions family. Visit IonsAnthology.com to find out more.
So yeah, so that's the book, voiceover done by the amazing Kenry Gregan, the music done by the awesome Joey Edsel. So check it out, IonsAnthology.com, and go buy the book if you want to. I think you should. I think it's good. Anyways, back to music. So you may have noticed that throughout the course of this show, the intro's, you know, about 30 seconds of a song, and at the end of the episode, I play the entire song for you. And you're probably wondering, if, I mean, maybe you're not, but you're probably wondering, what the hell? What is with the different songs? Why are some of them sound like they're recorded in a garage on someone's broken tape deck? You know, what's going on here? And why are some, you know, sound decent? Well, as some of you know, some of you don't know, but some of you do know, I used to be in bands. I used to record music. I used to write music all the time. Like, I used to have, before I was drawing comics, you know, and trying to make a living doing that and trying to make my name in the comic world, I was trying to be a rock star. And I was in several bands in high school and college, and we recorded some albums. We did some small Northwest tours here and there. By tours, I mean we played shows, you know, in a couple hour radius of where we lived, you know, over Seattle and Olympia and stuff like that. And, you know, we recorded a lot of songs. I have so much material that we recorded from time I was like 15 to time I was in my early 20s. And, you know, some of it's out there in some places, but most of it's not. And I decided that for this show, since it's basically my show to sit and rant and bullshit and talk about whatever I want to talk about, I was going to share some of these songs with you. Eventually, I'll probably run out. But, I mean, I've got at least 50 songs. So, I mean, it'll take at least 50 episodes to go through all of them. Then I'll figure something else out for an intro. But, you know, some of them are complete crap, but I'm going to play them for you because whatever. I'm not ashamed. I mean, I'm a little ashamed. Some of them are terrible. And I might not play the ones where I'm singing on them because I don't really care for my singing voice too much. It's pretty, my singing voice is pretty shitty, you know, but I'll play with my friend's singing voice on it. It'll be fun. You'll hear some songs from when I was like 14, some songs when I was like 18, 19, some live stuff, some studio recorded stuff. But I figured today, after telling you that, I would just talk to you a little bit about my history of music and the bands I was in and kind of my influences and stuff when I was playing, because, you know, I still play, mostly play guitar because I don't have my drum set up or any of that stuff, you know, ready to go with where I currently live, but I have my acoustic, so I still play that. But I figured I'd give you a little history lesson if you care, and if you don't care, you know, you can stop listening anytime. No one's forcing you to keep listening at this point, but if you do keep listening, thank you for caring about me. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you. So I started playing music, I started playing drums when I was about 6-7 years old. My parents took me to a music store when I was, my sister was doing piano lessons, and I just sat down on the drum set and started playing, and the drum instructor came over and started playing along with me, and I was just copying the beats he was doing, and the drum instructor was like, oh, you know, he's got some talent here, and you know, should get him into lessons. And I begged and begged and begged and begged and begged, like, Mom, Dad, can I have drum lessons, please? Please, 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 please. And I didn't get drum lessons until I was probably 12 or 13. 7th grade. However old you are in 7th grade. 13, 14? I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, I could do the math, and I could just think about my own kids that I have. They're in close to that grade, but I don't want to. So, you know, fast forward a little bit to when I'm about 13 or 14 years old. I picked up the guitar. My dad always played. My dad was in bands in the 60s. He was in a rock band called the Iguanas out of Denver, Colorado. They played cover songs and wrote some of their own songs. They played in Denver, they played Vail, they played Aspen, and they did some pretty cool stuff. I think they opened for Paul Revere and the Raiders one time, which was pretty cool. But that was my dad's stuff. So he had an acoustic guitar that my mom bought for him. It was a 1978, I think it was. And I mean, it still is. My mom still has it. My dad's passed away now, but it was 1978 Epiphone acoustic guitar. And it was a beast of a guitar, and it's a wonderful playing guitar. And I learned how to play on this behemoth 70s acoustic, this, you know, with the fat neck and the thick strings and all that fun stuff. So I learned how to play with the guitar that literally made my fingers bleed. And once I started playing it, about, I think I was 13 or 14, somewhere around that age playing guitar, I started learning how to play stupid little punk rock songs and things like, you know, the Iron Man from Black Sabbath and stupid guitar licks here and there. My dad taught me some of the songs he knew from the 60s, and then I learned how to play whatever punk songs. I was playing these punk songs on an acoustic guitar. But, you know, I spent a lot of time in my room and just sitting there just playing away, making my fingers bleed, wrapping them in Band-Aids and new skin, and going back and playing more, and they hurt and they were sore all the time. And just making it to where I was able to learn chords and scales and chord progressions. I was never a master of scales or chord progressions or chords at all. Most of what I liked to play was just jamming out and playing by feel. I mean, I learned some scales. And I mean, if you really want to be a great guitar player, a great musician, you should probably learn the music side, the music theory side and the scales. I just didn't. I was more in tune to wanting to write songs and just kind of jump into it and like see what I could do, like with what sounded good to me, and just have an ear for what I wanted to hear. Even though I learned some scales, and those scales that I learned really helped, but I kind of felt that after I learned like the main rock scales, I was like, I'm done. I mean, I was cocky. I was an idiot, but that's what I did. So I learned how to play guitar off of an acoustic. And then for, I think it was Christmas when I was 15 or 14, maybe 14, my parents bought me a Fender Squire Strat with a bullet amp that I used. And that was my first like electric guitar that I played. And I wore that. I mean, I played that thing so much that I broke the electronics in it. Because I just kept, I mean, I dropped it and, you know, as kids do, I didn't smash or anything like that, but it still plays as like a little practice guitar. It has a buzz on it, like the neck's warped a little bit because it's a Squire Strat and it's not that great. And I left it outside in my parents' garage for a while, so it got cold and the neck warped, which is a really bad idea, but I still have it because it's my first guitar. But, you know, I started playing that. And then my dad, the same year that I got that, there's this long-standing joke after this of my dad convinced my mom to buy me a guitar for Christmas. And he said, me too. And mom's like, oh yeah, sure, you can buy a guitar for yourself too. So he bought two guitars. He bought, his me too was two guitars. And he bought a Mexi Strat and he bought an American Tele. And this was 1996. So this was the, I can tell you how exactly how it was 96. I was 14. That's when I got it. But it was they were the 50th anniversary editions of those guitars. And after I'd been playing for a little while, probably about 15, it's about a year into playing, I was in a band. And we were practicing all the time. We were playing some shows here and there at 15. Little stupid shows, nothing big, like a coffee house and shit like that. And people, our friend's backyard for a party, you know. He let me start using his Mexi Strat because my Squire Strat had this buzz that we couldn't get fixed. And I mean, it was a good practice guitar, but as far as playing shows go, it wasn't the greatest. And then the next year when I was 15, I think I was 15. For my birthday, I decided that I wanted to get a bass guitar, mostly because I had met these guys at my parents' coffee shop. My parents owned a coffee shop back then in Silverdale, Washington, and they needed a bass player because their bass player they were going to kick out of the band because he wasn't working out. So I was like, oh, I can play bass, not ever having played bass before in my life. So I saved up my money for my birthday and from Christmas, and I convinced my parents to go in halfsies on me to where I paid for half the bass guitar, and they paid for the other half, and I bought myself a black Fender P bass, Mexican one, made in Mexico, and I taught myself how to play bass on that. And I taught myself how to play bass by listening to like Les Claypool from Primus and listening to, you know, punk stuff, and like really I kind of just like transcribed guitar lines to the bass and learned how to finger on the bigger bass guitar and really just kind of played the bass like a deeper sounding guitar, just because that's the style that I went for. And then I ended up joining that band with my friends, and at the time when I joined it, I was called Merryweather. And they were like an alternative emo rock band. And that band went through many names, went through Merryweather, went through Mir. And then it finally ended up on Artis before that broke up, before I quit. And then they broke up after I quit. But we recorded a couple albums. Did a live album at the college I went to. Played shows, you know, all around Washington. It was a lot of fun. And I played bass. But bass wasn't my primary instrument. I was playing bass literally just to be in the band with some, because they were older than me. I was 16. They were in their 20s. I thought it was so cool that these guys who were older than me wanted to have, you know, me, this kid, this little punk kid. And by punk kid, I mean I was just a kid. I wasn't really a punk rocker. I loved punk rock. I listened to a lot of punk rock. I played punk rock, but I didn't do anything bad. Like, I wasn't, like, into drinking or doing drugs. I mean, I drank sometimes, but I didn't do drugs. I didn't, like, do any – like, we played shows. I would literally show up, play the show, then leave. I wouldn't hang around and drink. I wouldn't hang around and, like, talk to people. I just – did my part and went home because that's all I wanted to do. I didn't want to deal with people, you know? So I was like, let me just play music. I want to rock out. And I would rock out and do my stuff and we leave. But, you know, during that time frame of playing in that band on bass, I was playing guitar in another punk band called Damn the Cow. That band went through many names too. Went through like Baneful Pyros, Darkfield Paradise, a bunch of dumbass names. Punk Doggy was the first name of that band. But I ended up moving to drums because drums was always like my real passion instrument. Like, I really love, like, even today, I just love playing drums. Like, drums is the drums and guitar. Actually, all three of them I play for different reasons, but drums, if I can sit at a drum set and just hammer away, it is an extremely good stress relief. So I was playing drums for the band. I moved to the drums because our drummer, you know, he sucked. We kicked him out, and we went through a couple other drummers who were pretty good, but they just didn't have the time to invest in what we wanted to do, and you know, they didn't really care for the songs we were doing. It just didn't work out. So I went to drums, and I loved playing drums. And I, you know, we played drums on a live album, and then we recorded a bunch of songs in our garage with me playing drums. And I used to help out the drummer in the other band where I played bass in, just like get the drum lines down for cover songs we did. And like, it was weird. I mean, he was a good drummer, but there was times where like I would have to help him remember how to play the drum lines he wrote, like the beats and stuff. But I mean, whatever, you know, everybody has their strengths and stuff like that. He ended up going to, after I quit that band on bass, he ended up moving to bass and they got a new drummer and the band sounded a lot better. But we would write these songs in both bands. You know, I'd be working on songs on bass, and with that band that were of one tone, they're more of like a more serious alternative tone. Then we'd do songs in my band, Dan the Cow, which were, you know, more punk, more fun, and like some improv live stuff, because we love to do this improv stuff, improv instrumental stuff, which is a lot of fun. In fact, some of the songs you'll hear that I'm playing are from both bands. Obviously, the ones that are typically the ones that sound more produced and more professional are the ones from Artis, the band with the older guys, because we don't really record in the garage. We only really record at studios. The ones that are sound like they're recorded on an air mic and sound like a bunch of kids fucking around in a garage, those are the ones that are from Dan the Cow that, you know, they're a lot of fun. They just don't have the best quality sound recordings, and that's okay. And I hope you can get past that as you listen to them, because some of them are a lot of fun. I'd love to, I mean, I'm 36 now. I haven't been doing bands for, God, a long ass time, but I would love to someday go back into a studio and record, you know, some new songs and record, take a couple of my favorite songs from the old Dan the Cow days and actually sit down with the guys and record them again, because that'd be so much fun. But now Dan the Cow, it does have one actual like professional quality album, because we recorded a live album at, as I mentioned earlier, both bands recorded a live album. The one for Artist, which at the time the band was called Mir. Man, I wonder if anybody's following along with this, but hopefully you are. The one for Mir, or Artist in the future, but past now, didn't come out very well. But the one for Dan the Cow was awesome, because it's just an instrumental live album. We just showed up and played like 6 or 8 songs that we weren't written beforehand. We just started playing and fucking jammed out for 45 minutes, and it was freaking awesome. And there's actually a video of it too, and I've always wanted to like take the studio recording, well, not studio, but like the professional quality live recording, and match it up to the video. I mean, I have the DAT tapes of the video, and I have the WAV files for the professional recording. I've just never done it. Someday I'll just do that and release it and let everybody have fun with it. You know, it was a lot of fun being in bands. You know, I miss it. I still play. I think the main reason why I wanted to use these old Stupa songs, I mean, I've played them on Half-Past Adventure before, and I've played, if you listen to the old original theme song for Spoiler Country, it's an Artist song, you know, but I'm putting them on this one and putting the full songs in their entirety so I can kind of share some of the stupid shit that I did as a kid. And you know what? I mean, it's fun for me. It's fun for me to share this. And if you love them or you hate them, you have comments on these songs, I'd love to hear them. You know, if you want to, I don't know, I feel like throwing myself out there, even though a lot of them are just complete shit. You know, it is what it is. But let's take a minute here, and since I own the rights to these, let's play some songs here. Let's play a couple songs. So first song I'm gonna play for you is a song that you've probably heard on the show. I believe it was one of the ones I did in the original one, and it's an instrumental we did, and it's called Cheese on My Toast. And that one was fun because that one was written around a drum line, completely around a drum line. And we wrote all the music around that one. And what's really funny about that one is the bass line that our bass player Calvin and I wrote together, that do-do-do-do-do-do, all that stuff, ended up becoming an artist song that that moved over to that side and, you know, kind of formulated a bass line into a song on the other side. I mean, they're totally different types of songs. But let's play that song. So this is the song that came out of that bass line, Cheese on My Toast. And this one is called Judas.
Talking to a plane.
So that's funny. You know, see, a little more produced, a little more well put together with actual vocals and, you know, a chord structure there. That was the difference between the two bands. One of them was more experimental, but one of them was, you know, a lot more, you know, structured, which was fun. The next song I want to play for you off of one of these old records that I did, and it is one that I don't really play too often. It's a little interesting, but it's called Calvin Psychedelic. This one was done for my buddy Calvin for his music theory class in college or high school or something like that. And we recorded it in my bedroom, and we added vocals, which was us listening to it on a this was recorded on a shitty 4-track recorder. And we recorded it, recorded vocals with my buddy Kyle, who's in the other band for a while. And we then took the vocals and played them backwards and put them over the top of this. And my friend Brian's on it. And I mean, it's a lot of fun. This one's called Calvin Psychedelic.
We'll be right back.
Mission Last of Us.
And that, I mean, you can't imagine. I mean, I'm playing guitar. There's a stupid-ass guitar solo that I thought was so cool at the time. And listen to it now, it's like, ugh, it's kind of cringeworthy. But, you know, I was like 15, so what the fuck did I know? All right, last song I'll play for you is, this is one is a shitty, shitty recording. And I apologize in advance for the static on it. I would try when I master this file down for you. I would try to make it sound a little bit better. But this is one. And you know what? I'm actually going to play one more after this. But a little hidden song at the end. But this one's called Hagjana, which means half-assed G.I. Joe neo-Nazi Eskimo. And it is a punk song. It is punk to its core. And it is recorded in a shitty garage with a shitty tape deck and a couple area mics. And we had a lot of fun doing it. I wish this was a better recording, but here, have a listen to Hagjana, and I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah. Let's fucking do it, damn it.
He was only 16, couldn't even vote. Next thing he knew, he was in Vietnam, sleeping on a U-boat. He was half-assed G.I. Joe, Billy Bob Commando. He's a patriotic neo-Nazi asshole. He was shot up with lead while trying to fix a flagpole. They paid the final respects on the grassy knoll. But before he could be pronounced dead, he got up and he said, it isn't what your country can do for you, but what you can do for me. He was only 18, finally coming home. His closest kin had died in the war. He was all alone. The house he grew up in got torn out under him. He had nobody. He was all alone. He was half-assed G.I. Joe, Billy Bob Commando. He's a patriotic neo-Nazi asshole. He was shot up with lead while trying to fix flagpole. They paid the final respects on the grassy knoll. But before we could be pronounced dead, he got up and he said, it isn't what your country can do for you, but what you can do for me. He was a nice guy, just like you and me. But when trouble stuck its ugly head through his door, he was a nice guy, no fucking more. He was half-assed G.I. Joe, Billy Bob Commando. He's a patriotic neo-Nazi asshole. He was shot up with lead while trying to fix a flagpole. They paid the final respects on the grassy knoll. But before he could be pronounced dead, he got up and he said, it isn't what your country can do for you, but what you can do for Calvin. Oh.
All right, as you can tell, that was a really shitty recording, but it's a lot of fun. It's a fun song. I really wish we had a better recording of that one. So last song I'm going to play for you is one I'm not going to come back from it and talk about it afterwards. I'm just gonna push play here in a minute on it and let you listen to it. And this is probably one of the most fun things I ever did with the band Damn the Cow. And all I want to say is, shoop.
How you doing, baby? No, not you.
Shoot.
You, the bow-legged one.
Shoot.
What's your name? Ooh, damn, that sounds sexy.
Here I go, here I go, here I go again. Girls, what's my weakness? Okay, then, chillin',
chillin', minding my business. You saw they looked around and I couldn't believe this. I swear, I stared, my niece, my witness. The brother had it going on with something kinda wicked, wicked, had to kick it. I'm not shy, so I asked for the digits. A home note that don't make me see what I want. Slip slide to it swiftly, felt it in my hips, so I dipped back to my bag of tricks. And then I flipped for a tip, make me wanna do tricks for him. Licked him like a lollipop should be licked. Came to my senses and I chilled for a bit. Don't know how you do the voodoo that you do so well. It's a spell, hell makes me wanna shoot, shoot, shoot. Packing is stacked, especially in the back. But you wanna think you might afford a butt like that. Can't some fries with a shake, shake booty. This could kill you, would be a dose of your shotgun.
Bang!
What's up with that bang? I wanna know, how does it hang? Straight up, wait up, hold up, you still up like Prince said. I like a real wild B-boy style by the mile. Smooth black skin with a smile bright as the sun. I wanna have some fun. Come and give me some of that yum yum chocolate chip honey dip. Can I get a scoop? Baby, take a ride in my coupe. You're making me wanna
shoot, baby. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shoot, shoot. Don't you know I shoot, baby.
Let me bring you back to the subject. Pep's on the set, make you get hot, make you work up a sweat. When you skip to my loo, my darling, not falling in love, but I'm falling for you. I'm gonna get you, bet your bottom dollar you are best under pressure. Get your lips wet, cause it's time to have Pep.
One, get set, go, let me go, let me shoot to the next man in a three-piece suit. I spend all my dough, ray me cutie. Shoot, shoot, a doobie, like Scooby Dooby Doo. I love you in your big jeans. You give me nice dreams, make me wanna scream. Ooh, 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 I love what you do. When you do what you do, you make me wanna shoot. Oh my goodness, girl, look at him, the cutest brother in here, and he's coming this way. Ooh.
SNP wanna kick with me, cool, but I'm wicked G. Hit skins, but never quickly. I hit the skins for the hell of it, just for the delegate, for the smell of it. You want my rod, here's my hot rod. 12 inches to the yard, type it sounding like a retard. Big twin number 6-2, wanna hit you.
What you want?
What you wanna do?
I need a sheet!